Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For many decades, music fans have taken pride in building their own personal music collections. The form kept changing. 78s, vinyl, LPs, 8-tracks, cassette tapes, CDs, then the MP3 files on a computer or iPod. Now, the music collection is going entirely virtual. Next week, Apple will announce its iCloud service. Your music on their servers accessed over the internet. No records, no CDs, no files. This hour on Point, we're looking at music in the cloud. You can join the conversation. Are you ready for music, your music, rolling out of the sky? Do you trust it? Will you use it? Or do you still want to dust some vinyl? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later this hour, we'll hear from best-selling author Jonathan Franzen and his meditation on love at this year's Kenyon College graduation. But first, joining me now from San Francisco is Brian Chen, technology reporter at Wired.com. He's been following Apple and the iCloud story. He also has a book coming out next week called Always On, How the iPhone Unlocked the Anything, Anytime, Anywhere Future and Locked Us In. Brian Chen, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Washington is John Potter with RPG Strategies. In 1998, he founded the Digital Media Association, which advocates for wider copyright access for companies like Apple and Amazon. He was recently a panelist on the future of cloud computing in the music business at the Rethink Music Conference at the Berklee College of Music. John Potter, welcome. Great to have you as well.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
So, Brian Chen, begin to take us in here. They're not the first ones to do it. It's not their first time trying to do it. What is expected from Apple on Monday?
I think the agreement among technology observers is that the big thing on Monday is going to be iTunes in the cloud, as in on-demand music. So, say, for example, you're in your car and you're really aching to hear the new Wilco song, for example.
Okay.
You just want to go to the iTunes store, you want to buy it, and you want to play it right away. You don't want to buy it and then download it and wait for it to load in the library and then play it. So the idea of on-demand iTunes is that you instantly get the music right when you request it. And I think that's going to make a big difference. The thing about Apple is that they've already, according to music industry sources, they've already cemented deals with three major labels. And that's something that Amazon doesn't have right now.
And the LA Times reporting today that it's now four. They say Apple's got to deal with Warner, with EMI, with Universal, and with Sony. We'll see for sure on Monday. John Potter, how big a deal is this? Don't have to have the MP3. Just, do it right out of the cloud, wireless, and I've got it, and it lives there wherever I am. Is this a big deal, John?
Not particularly. Not for consumers who are music aficionados who have been using cloud music services like Rhapsody and, mm-hmm. and Moog, Napster. Those are all on-demand music services which are available wirelessly.
But here's Apple wrapping up three or maybe all four of the big music sources. Doesn't that extend the range of what's going to be available this style, John Potter?
No. I think that what's remarkable about it is that Apple has held on to a digital download pay-per-purchase model for a long time, that consumers have had access to on-demand music of millions and millions of tracks for quite some time. And with 3G and now 4G, it's available wirelessly and in mobile situations. But the consumers haven't really gotten it yet, and that's a marketing problem, and that's a business challenge which some of the pre-existing services have not been able to conquer.
iTunes has 75 or 85% of the market. I mean, market power itself, Brian, may now push this into a mainstream position, though it hasn't worked for them in the past. What's the money arrangement with consumers with this new service Apple's expected to announce, its iCloud service, Brian? How's it work tune by tune?
It hasn't been confirmed what exactly the pricing is going to be yet, but the fact that Apple has such strong market power in the music industry would suggest that they're probably going to have pretty good prices like they do right now, which is 99 cents a song, based on the fact that they basically started the digital music industry. I think we could have faith that they would be able to negotiate some pretty fair prices.
And how is that going to work? I mean, I've read in some places that what they're going to do is, look into my computer or iPod, see what iTunes songs I already have, and automatically make those available. Do you have to buy everything again to have it available through iCloud, Brian, or not?
I think the idea is once you choose to purchase the song, it's going to store in, quote-unquote, an online music locker. And anywhere you are with a music or an internet connection, you should be able to access that music.
So you said earlier, picture you're in your car, but is everybody going to have access to this in the car? Is the 3G signal everywhere? I don't know. If I'm in the boonies, am I going to have it? Is it really anytime, anywhere music?
That's a really good point, and that's part of the reason why I don't think iCloud is going to eliminate the local hard drive storage solution, which iTunes is right now. It's probably going to be a combination going forward. Like, I'll be able to have the option to download it onto, say, my iPhone, or I'll have the option to just stream it wirelessly over the internet. So I could see both worlds coming together so we can conveniently have music the way that we want it to, want to have it.
Yeah, John Potter, what do you expect from Apple as compared to what's out there already? I mean, Amazon came out in March with this music locker, as you called it, Amazon Cloud Player. You can upload music to their computers, listen to songs from any browser. Google, just last month with its music beta service. Is the Apple service look like it's going to be some different format, different form, John?
The Apple service will be simpler for consumers in one respect, and harder for consumers and less interesting in another respect. It will be simpler in that when you purchase music from Apple, it will automatically be stored in the cloud for you, stored in your locker. I believe Amazon is also doing the same thing when you purchase MP3s. They're not doing the same thing, I don't believe, when you purchase CDs from Amazon. So your music that you've purchased will already be there. What Apple will not provide that will be much less interesting for real music fans is you will not be able to upload your music collection, your personally acquired music collection that you've acquired over 5 or 10 or 20 years, up to your locker. With Amazon and Google, you can upload all of your music regardless of where you purchased it from. And so, in fact, what Apple is making available to you is only your iTunes library, and what Amazon and Google are making available to you, should you choose to use it, is the entirety of your library.
Why is Apple not making everything available?
Apple has chosen to go to get licenses from the record labels, and Google and Amazon tried to do that also but were unsuccessful. One of the reasons, one of the points that the labels and the digital services are fighting about is whether a licensed cloud, whether the record labels will permit the licensed locker to have music in it that is of an unknown origin. And the challenge for the labels is in their minds, some would question this, that if you allow people to store music of unknown origin into your digital locker, that is allowing you to store pirated music, because from their perspective, everything that you own that they don't know where you purchased it is pirated. And so all that you bought over the last 30 years, all that you ripped from your purchased CDs, all that you downloaded, they don't want it in your locker because they haven't, with certainty, been paid for it. And so they don't want these lockers to, quote, promote piracy.
So with Amazon and Google, you could. With Apple, it looks as though you won't be able to. How do you think they calculated that trade-off, Brian Chen? What do they get in return for not allowing you to dump everything you've got, no matter its origin, into your Apple locker or its iCloud?
Well, excuse me. Some have argued that it's a little bit inconvenient to have to upload all your music to the quote-unquote cloud before you're able to listen to it. And the fact that it sounds like Apple is going to offer a really seamless solution where, you know, you can have something that you don't even – you can access something that you don't even have yet and say, like my example, driving on the road, say, okay, I want this Janet Jackson song or something. I feel like listening to that now. I can get that instantly.
But you have to buy it, I believe.
You'd have to buy it. You'll have it instantly.
Yeah.
And I guess access is part of this. I mean, they've got Warner and EMI and Universal Sony reportedly all to the table because they're not going to be hosting pirated music, I guess, as the big labels might see it, Brian, in the Apple cloud.
Right. I mean, Apple has worked with the labels, and this is why they've been successful to help prevent piracy. They're competing with piracy, is what Steve Jobs has said all along.
So you will still, in that case, you still have to keep a lot of your stuff in your own files unless you went to Google or Amazon. So it wouldn't be a complete solution, but it'd be convenient. And convenience has been a big selling point for iTunes throughout this digital music wave, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that iTunes is such a dominant player right now, like you said, the vast majority of the digital music market belongs to iTunes. It shows that, you know, most customers out there are actually not pirates, and they look for honest solutions to buy music, and that's how Apple has succeeded all along. So I could see the iCloud being a pretty successful solution as well.
And is it automatic? I didn't quite get that. Is it going to just put my iTunes stuff, will it be there waiting for me, or will I have to do something to get tunes I've already purchased through iTunes to come down off iCloud?
Like I think the idea is, like, say you have your iPhone and you search for a song, you can instantly play it,
mm-hmm.
right? So the way that we do it right now is I'd load iTunes, I'd find the song, I'd download the song, that'd take about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and I'd start playing the song after it loads in the library. So I think that time difference is going to be pretty convenient for people. Every now and then I'll have friends over and I'll have my iTunes library playing on the stereo, and people will say, can I listen to this song right now?
Yep. And you'll be able to say yes, whatever that is.
I'll say, yeah, I'll go right away instead of say, oh, let me download this song. Let's wait for a bit, you know.
Brian, hold the thought. John Potter, Brian Chen. We're talking about music in the cloud. The most number one downloaded song on Apple's iTunes right now, right here, Rolling in the Deep by Adele. A lot more in the cloud for a lot more people soon. You can join us, 800-423-8255. Do you want your music from the cloud? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
In my adobe hacienda, there's a touch of Mexico.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about music in the cloud as Apple readies its iCloud announcement, what it means for listeners, artists, the music business, and what exactly is going to be available. Gene Autry there with My Adobe Hacienda may not be your favorite. I happen to love it. But soon, you may be able to get it through Apple, just straight out of the cloud. Brian Chenza joins us today from San Francisco, technology reporter at Wired.com. Look for his new book, Always On. John Potter's with us from Washington, consultant with RPG Strategies. Brian, John, lots of questions for listeners here. Let's get straight to them. Blackford, Idaho, Dine is calling. Hi, Dine. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What's your question?
Well, you know, I've got some vested interest. I've got a little over 6,000 record albums.
Okay.
And I've been trying to digitize them.
Yeah.
And I figure that I will be long dead before my kids are all done digitizing them. And I'm wondering if this isn't going to preempt my need to do that. And also, is what I have going to be available?
So you've got 6,000 albums, and in what form are they? I mean, you're talking about everything.
Vinyl.
And why are you digitizing them yourself? Because you don't want to go out and buy all that again, I guess.
Well, yeah, I don't want to buy it again. I bought them all once already, you know, and that's one of the
sure.
things I kind of have a hard spot with Alpha was I had an iPod. I bought them when they came out. And when I got a new computer, I lost everything that I had because it wanted me to rebuy everything that I already had on there.
So let's take it to our experts. Brian Chen, here's Dine in Blackford, Idaho. He's got 6,000 albums on vinyl. Does iCloud do anything for him?
Hey, I don't think it's going to prevent you from achieving this goal. I mean, that's a ton of music. There are plenty of other services out there right now that allow you to store online files, like for example, Dropbox, you could is a service that's not as big as Apple, but it's basically an online storage service where you could just drop all your music in there, and you could listen to it anytime you want from, like, say, an iPhone or a computer. Just because Apple, it sounds like iCloud is not going to be an online uploading solution, doesn't mean that they're going to prevent this from ever happening.
And so a lot of people have done this already. Dine, I've got here Maximiliano on Facebook says he's already uploaded his entire music library to Amazon's Music Cloud service. 20 gigs, that's a lot. John Potter, people put a lot of effort into their music collections. I mean, what about vulnerability? What about backup? Are we so sure that, you know, what you store with Apple or Amazon never goes away?
I think we can never be sure that it never goes away, but I think we can be reasonably sure with companies of this size, with servers of their capacity, that they have enough redundancy that we might lose it. There might be an outage and things like that, but essentially our music is secure. Having said that, storage space is reasonably inexpensive, and to buy a home hard drive with a terabyte, so you have a backup in your house or in your safe deposit box, as well as a backup on the Amazon cloud drive, is not a bad thing.
I mean, here's a headline just from April. Amazon's trouble raises cloud computing doubts. You know, technical problems interrupted computer services for a couple of days there. Here's Matt Eastwood at IDC saying this is a wake-up call for cloud computing. Brian Chen, what about it? I mean, nothing is for sure, I guess. Apple's just built this huge new 500,000-square-foot data center in North Carolina, well, back in 2009, to support this kind of volume. But what about the security of, you know, of what is very often a beloved collection of music for people?
You mean in terms of if they were to lose it?
I don't know. Or... You don't want to get an email one day or a text from Apple saying, oh, sorry, we had a power outage and your music collection's gone.
I think in general, yeah, we do take a leap of faith when it comes to storing information on the internet. And there have been instances where there have been outages from, say, like Microsoft. Their Danger server went down for a while. They lost a whole bunch of information. We do take a risk, but with Apple, they haven't have a proven track record of losing a ton of information, although with MobileMe is their other online service right now. They did have an email outage for at least a few weeks, maybe 2 weeks, where I think about 20,000 people couldn't access their email at all. So we see the risks here where we're just kind of ceding control to, you know, a bigger company of our information. And I think people who are more tech savvy tend to just go ahead and trust these companies.
John Potter, describe for us the variety of devices this will be available on. I mean, obviously, if your home computer is hooked up to the web, it's there. Obviously, if you've got an iPhone, or is it only Apple phones or other 3G phones, you can do it there. What else? How am I going to be able to access this? A regular iPod isn't necessarily even wired up to the web.
That's correct. I think the one of the advantages Apple has always had, or at least until about 3 years ago when they brought out the iPhone with the open platform, Apple has always controlled the solution from end to end. It was the iTunes Music Store. It was an Apple device. It was a Mac computer. When they opened it up to Windows, they obviously gave up some of that control. And now the question is, are they going to go even more to give up control? And I don't know if you'll be able to get this off of your portable BlackBerry, for example, or your Samsung phone on your Verizon network that's not an iPhone. I think we're going to, if I was rolling this out on day one, I'd probably start small and make sure that there's no glitches before I rolled it out to a broader universe.
Brian, what about if you look at a map of the country? I mean, and how much of the country actually has this kind of 3G cover? You say you're in your car. You know, am I going to have to be in a metropolitan area to have access to this? What if I'm driving in the Mojave Desert? Am I going to have my music there?
I'd say the vast majority of the United States, at least, is covered by 3G right now. But like I said, because in general, we can't really trust 3G cellular networks that much. They tend to not be reliable. You know, AT&T has a pretty bad reputation for reliability, especially here in San Francisco. I think the fact that we can store files right now on the iPhone. Like, you know, you can download a file, you could store it on the drive there. can ensure us that we're probably going to still have that alternative. It's still going to be on the device. But the iCloud option is just, you know, another option, another way to get the music.
Tiffany,
so if you do have, yeah, if you do have internet access, then good, cool. I could just listen to the music right now. But if you don't, maybe I can get it later and I'll just save it on the device.
People still with questions there. Tiffany on Facebook asks, she says she can't stream from the office. So question, does this mean that music I buy lives on my account in the cloud and can be accessed from any location, Brian?
Streaming from what service is my question.
My guess is she has a block. Her office blocks her from streaming,
yeah.
and so it's not going to help her at all.
So keep that iPod strapped to the belt. Ted in Nashville is calling. Hi, Ted. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Pretty well. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm not really thrilled by it. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, you've already been talking about this access to the internet, you know.
Right.
This convenience of having this couple of minutes cut out of the process of buying the music, that's not that big a deal to me. What's more important to me is that I have the music I want when I want it, which is what the iPod and the iTouch and even the iPad has done for me. But, you know, on a bigger scale, I'm a teacher. I teach college students, and, you know, there is this attitude of I want it now. Right now.
Yeah.
No, not in a minute, now.
Right.
And there's a problem-solving gap there because they don't want to ponder over the problem, or they don't want, they don't want to suss it out. And there's this immediacy of, you know, they grew up in a world that says, you can have it right now, and a minute from now is not now, and a minute and a half from now is even worse. You know, I want it, when I say now, I mean now. And I think that's a bit of a problem in a general sense, but for me, I wouldn't want to give up the control of having the music I want when I want it to cut out a couple of minutes.
Is it you know, wanting it now, that's a kind of a general attitude, as you suggest there, Ted. You know, whatever it is digital, you want it right now. Does it matter in particular if it's about music? I mean, if we're going to have things now, is there a reason for music not to be included in that instant delivery world?
No, I think I think people will flock to this because it will precipitate that attitude of I can get it now. I mean, if you've ever been in line in a fast food restaurant, you know, and somebody in front, you know, somebody, God forbid, takes too long bringing you your food, you know, we want this instantaneous kind of delivery system. I think people will flock to it.
Let me ask you, if I may, while I've got you, Ted, here's James, and he writes on Facebook. He says, I think this is probably super convenient, but I think we're in the process of devaluing music. When it's everywhere, anytime, it's relative to everything. Music is slowly losing its power to affect people. It's everywhere. Gas stations, shopping malls, grocery stores, we're at a point where we're unconsciously learning to ignore it due to oversaturation. What do you say to that view, Ted?
You know, I don't know that I agree with that. I think free access to music gives you the opportunity to enjoy it more. I'm not sure I would go there with it. You know, if you don't want the service, don't use the service. I think easy access to any kind of music is pretty much a wonderful thing. You know, if I can go on and I can get Beethoven, or I can get the Beatles, or I can get the Grateful Dead, or I can get Little Feat, or I can get, you know, any smattering of this that I want, I think that's a powerful thing, and I think you could make the same argument that it would lead you to appreciating more music.
Ted,
in terms of the impulse or the stuff that's coming in from outside the outside world, I think that's a daily crisis that we have to deal with as well. Just how much information we are always inundated with via the internet or the radio or the phone or traffic or noise. I think that's going to be an ongoing battle.
It's bigger than music. Ted in Nashville, I appreciate your call. Let's get a musician in here to look at this new development. Jim Eno joins us now from Austin, Texas. He's drummer and co-founder of the band Spoon, also a record producer. He was in Boston in April for the big Rethink Music Conference on the business of music at Berklee College. Jim Eno, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks so, what do you think of the new service? It's not the first time there's music in the cloud, but Apple's getting behind it in a big way, and we're told, you know, Warner, EMI, Universal, Sony, maybe all lined up for this. As an artist, as a musician, does it matter to you if it's rolling down from the heavens, Jim, or if it's on an iPod or on a LP vinyl?
Well, as an artist, I mean, the hardest thing right now is for
for musicians to actually pay their bills while they do their art, you know?
Yes.
So the idea that what Apple's doing could drive more traffic to the Apple site, sell more music, and Apple is good at paying the artists for digital, you know, for digital access. So as far as that goes, I mean, that's only going to help artists, you know. From a consumer standpoint, though, I mean, it seems like if my whole iTunes library is not available on that cloud, that is not, you know, that is not very useful, you know, in going after what John was saying.
Right. If I picked up some stuff from here and there and not through iTunes and maybe not even on the straight up and up, if it's not there, what about
it? I have like 100 gigs in my iTunes library just from listening to different bands that I may be producing or high-res files, and I would love to get those everywhere. But like, even if I put a CD that I bought in my computer and I rip it, my understanding is that Apple is going to scan my iTunes directory. If it recognizes a song, even if I didn't buy it on iTunes, mm-hmm. it's going to pay something to the labels for that song. I mean, that's my understanding how it would work, because what that means is that gives the record labels a little piece of this possible subscription to help pay the artists, to help pay the publishers, and to pay them.
Let's hear a little bit of your own, Spoon. This is My Mathematical Mind from Spoon. John Potter, there's Spoon, and you hear Jim on the drums there. Has he got it right on how artists will be paid or labels will be paid if it's in your iTunes and up in the cloud, John?
I'm actually not sure. That obviously hasn't been announced, and, mm-hmm. and Jim might have a little inside skinny from talking to his label or from, you know, or one of the other industry insiders who are in those negotiations. I think it is important for artists to be paid. And it's important for Apple to figure out how they're going to charge consumers enough money for this and whether that's going to be in addition to the 99 cents per track or, as Jim said, whether they're going to charge some sort of a add-on fee or simply take it out of their pocket in order to pay the labels some extra money for songs of an undetermined origin. That the challenge here is that the iTunes Music Store, from all that you hear Apple talk about, is in itself a loss leader or is a very, very narrow margin business, an incredibly mm-hmm. narrow margin business. And, of course, the record labels are unhappy because Apple sells music at a loss or at a minimum gain, but really they make all of their money selling iPods and iMacs and things like that. If that is the correct economic structure, and Apple is going to pay additional royalties from what is essentially an iTunes-like service in the cloud, then they're going to have to charge the consumer something. So now the consumers are going to be charged more to store their music remotely. But again, it's only going to be limited to that music which they either own or have already purchased. Then the question is going to be all the new music they're still going to have to purchase a la carte. And then you get back to a really 2 or 3 year, 5 year long discussion, which is, will consumers ultimately care to own the music and pay 99 cents a track? Or would they rather in the future go to a subscription service like a Moog or a Rhapsody where they're paying $10 a month and having unlimited access to that 6 or 7 million tracks in the cloud and access to having it downloaded on their portable devices and on their PCs?
A lot more details to come on with the formal announcement on Monday. The LA Times is reporting today that Apple plans eventually to charge a $25 annual subscription fee, also selling advertising around its iCloud service. We'll come back and look at that and much more with John Potter, Brian Chen, and Jim Eno, drummer for the band Spoon. Listeners, you can join us. What do you think? Is your life, your computing life, already in the cloud? What about your music? What about your bootleg stuff, your LimeWire stuff? Will that go to the cloud? Do you have all the gear to take advantage of this at home, walking around in your car? Can you afford mobile access to the cloud. It's not free. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Here's Spoon's Got Nothing. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with little Claude Debussy there. Sonata in D minor, maybe one day soon, coming to you out of the cloud, distant servers from Apple's new iCloud. You may already be getting your music from the cloud. We're talking about music in the cloud this hour as Apple gets ready to announce its iCloud service and looking at what it means for listeners, for artists, for the music business. Brian Chen is with us from Wired.com, technology reporter there, author of Always On. John Potter's with us from RPG Strategies in Washington, and from Austin, Texas, Jim Eno is with us, drummer and co-founder of the band Spoon. Sam writes online, says, I've always gotten my music from the cloud. It's a cloud I call radio. We're down with that, Sam. Dino's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Dino, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
You too. What do you think?
Well, I hate to be the token Luddite here, but I'm a vinyl collector and I'm a vinyl dealer, and I take a little bit of offense to the idea that the ownership is kind of going out the window. And at the same time, I think the idea of being called old school, as I'm sure I will be, I think I'm seeing that change. I'm seeing a lot of young people who really feel the need to have tangibility of vinyl records, of something that they feel they should keep. And I'm seeing that vinyl's the only format that they can do that with nowadays. I've seen this change dramatically in the past 10 years.
Ownership and music. I mean, that's an interesting philosophical relationship. Dino, let me take it to our artist. Jim, you're the artist. Dino wants to actually own something. Maybe he doesn't want it just to pour down, disembodied from the heavens. What do you think about that as an artist?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're making music, especially as a band, you look at the album as a whole, and you know, you try to make the album work together. You work on sequencing, on songs and everything. You want it to be the best you can be, obviously. So tangibly being able to hold a piece of vinyl in your hand, I mean, I totally appreciate that. And I, you know, I have a huge vinyl collection too. The problem is that, you know, I mean, a lot of people like convenience a lot better, you know, and started with what, cassette tapes, and then it goes to CDs. And the idea of getting your music anywhere, I think, is pretty appealing. When I'm at home, I listen to vinyl, but, you know, when I'm on the road, I have, you know, my iPhone, you know, my iPod computer and stuff. So I think it's a matter of convenience, but I do agree that, you know, having ownership of something to hold and to look at liner notes and artwork is still very important to me.
Brian Chen, what do you think? Our caller Dino's not the only one. Jessica writes on Facebook, what bothers me about cloud technology is the loss of true ownership of your purchases. You're basically paying for data and space rental.
I completely understand that feeling. I most of my media, my videos and my music are all stored on a computer or an iPhone. I kind of miss like this romantic notion of just having things, you know. And I'm actually planning to buy a record player too. But convenience does outweigh that kind of romantic feeling for a lot of people. It's kind of like, you know, the best camera is a camera that you have everywhere, and the best music player is the music player you have everywhere. So there's a music player in the iPhone, there's a music player in the iPod, and all your music can be contained in that library. And just being able to have that convenience of listening to any song that you have, that you feel like listening to at that moment, anywhere, I think is a pretty good benefit.
Of course, even the idea of ownership can cut in a lot of ways. I mean, you may have vinyl. Look at the tornadoes that have ripped through a lot of houses and strewn everything all over the place. Or here online, Travis writes to us. He says, my hard drive crashed just last week, lost my entire music library. He may wish it was off in somebody's server farm or had been. Bruce in Berlin, Connecticut. Bruce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And gentlemen. My main concern about this is that I have to assume that the iCloud, along with iTunes and MP3, are all compressed audio data. Unlike a CD or a Blu-ray audio track, which is uncompressed, lossless audio. And as a classical music lover, I'm really interested in the highest quality sound I can get. I have vinyl records and I have CDs. I never believed for a second that vinyl is superior to CDs. I have two state-of-the-art transcription turntables, and you know, I prize them. They're like antiques.
So can you tell if it's an MP3 or a CD?
Huh?
Can you tell if it's an MP3 or a CD? Can you hear that compression immediately, Bruce?
Well, it's it takes a certain amount of close listening, but I mean, it's a question of the loss of detail and the loss of dynamic range that's available in classical music on CD, which I don't think will be there on these systems, because there is a data compression, just as there is data compressions on DVDs.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Bruce. I mean, Jim Eno, let me come first to you. I mean, there were many, many years where it was all about the exquisite nuances of the quality of the music, and now, you know, in the convenience digital age, it's more about convenience than that last little tiny margin of quality. What do you think about that trade-off? Bruce doesn't want to make it.
Well, I mean, again, it's a matter of convenience. You know, I can listen to CDs on my home stereo, but, you know, when you listen to music on Apple earbuds, you're probably not going to be able to tell the difference between a lossless and a compressed MP3. You know, when you're at home on your stereo, you know, then you will be able to tell the difference. Also, we don't know yet if Apple is going to support the, you know, Apple lossless format. They may. And if so, then you could have a lossless, at least their encoding of it, file available everywhere, too. It's going to take up more space. But, you know, if that's what you have in your iTunes library, you know, Apple may support it. I guess we just don't know.
Brian, any idea on that front, if Apple will support this in the iCloud service, lossless form?
In the past, I don't think that they have. But like we've discussed, the convenience of digital music has won a lot of people over. And I've read something funny that, you know, like, it would take a dog's ear to tell the difference between an MP3 and a lossless file, like we were just talking about. But, I mean, of course, I do believe audiophiles have a very trained ear to listen for that type of quality.
Yeah, you're going to get an argument with Bruce right there, I think, in Connecticut. Frank in Pocatello, Idaho, you're on the air, Frank. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. I kind of thought that, my thought was that with this new digital age and kind of moving towards music, having it so easy access and everything, I thought that, I wonder if we're not sort of moving away from the art of listening, or the act of listening, in the sense that we're losing our ability to focus on the music itself. And so we can sit down and read a book and focus on the act of reading, you know, but and sit down and, you know, listen to maybe with vinyl, as it used to be, where you'd have to make the effort to put it on, you know, and say, I want to listen to this, and sit down and close your eyes and focus. But well, now, you know, I wonder, with all this sort of instant music, you know, what is that doing to our appreciation of music?
Well, you're afraid it becomes background music, Frank. Convenient just to float behind us as we do everything else, maybe.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yes, that's kind of what I thought.
Oh, I don't know. Jim Eno, do you want people to sit down and purely savor Spoon when they listen to Spoon? You know, what if they're, I don't know, on their bike or shopping for Cheerios?
They should listen to it whenever they want, you know?
Is that a business commentary or an artistic commentary?
Well, I mean, I think it's artistic, too. You want people to listen to your music wherever they want, you know? But I do think that as an artist, the thing to remember is that there are a lot of songs that, like, all of us know exactly the first time where we heard that song for the first time.
Yes.
You know, like, okay, I remember where I was when I heard this Smith song. I don't think that power of music is going to be diminished with this cloud-based system or the music available everywhere, people still get excited about music, and I think it has so much impact. Again, that's me as an artist, but I sincerely do believe that. I think there's maybe a shorter attention span, but, you know, kids are still going to be remembering where they heard that song, I think.
And John Potter, does this lead to a shakeout on some end of the digital music business? David asks on Facebook, how will this affect the business of Pandora with its streaming music, you know, but random selection and advertisements? Does some of that stuff begin to get shoved away if Apple succeeds with iCloud, John?
I don't think so. I think Pandora's primary competition is the radio and other radio providers. Pandora surprises you. The beauty of Pandora is the unexpected song where they know what you like and they connect you to something you didn't know and you say, wow, that's really great, as opposed to the iTunes service. Regardless of whether iTunes is in the cloud or on your local hard drive, you have to ask for the song. There's a difference between on-demand versus the surprise, and I think that there's room for both.
Brian, excitement around the iCloud announcement in California these days? People look at this as a game changer in terms of market presence?
I think we just look at it as the next step, just the evolution of having instant gratification. I mean, iTunes was already a big step toward that in terms of being able to click a single button and buy a song digitally. The next step is just on demand. And I think we're not going to lose like what we have right now. We're not going to lose vinyl. We're not going to lose just the instant click iTunes purchase. We're going to have another option. And I think a lot of people who are into instant gratification are looking forward to that.
Brian Chen with Wired.com, author of Always On, coming out next week. Brian, thank you very much for being with us today from San Francisco.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And John Potter in Washington, D.C. at RPG Strategies. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you, Tom.
Jim Eno with the band Spoon, joining us from Austin, Texas. Thanks, Jim. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Tom.
And we go out with a little Rolling Stones here and Get Off of My Cloud. In a moment, author Jonathan Franzen delivers a meditation on love to the graduating class at Kenyon College. This is On Point. Novelist Jonathan Franzen has written on family, relationships, and American life in his National Book Award-winning novel, The Corrections, and last year's best-selling, Freedom. On May 21st, he delivered the commencement address at Kenyon College in Gambier, Ohio. We're going to share an excerpt with you here. Jonathan Franzen exhorts the new grads to stay open and to seek out real, visceral love.
The prospect of pain generally, the pain of loss, of breakup, of death, is what makes it so tempting to avoid love and stay safely in the world of liking. My wife and I, having married too young, eventually surrendered so much of ourselves and caused each other so much pain that we each had reason to regret ever having taken the plunge. And yet I can't quite make myself regret it. For one thing, our struggle to honor our commitment actively came to constitute who we were as people. We weren't helium molecules floating inertly through life. We bonded and we changed. For another thing, and this may be my main message to you all today, pain hurts, but it doesn't kill. When you consider the alternative, an anesthetized dream of self-sufficiency abetted by technology, pain emerges as the natural product and natural indicator of being alive in a resistant world. To go through a life painlessly is not to have lived. Even just to say to yourself, oh, I'll get to that love and pain stuff later, maybe in my 30s, is to consign yourself to 10 years of merely taking up space on the planet and burning up its resources. When I was in college and for many years after, I liked the natural world. Didn't love it, but definitely liked it. It can be very pretty, nature. And since I've been fired up by critical theory and was looking for things to find wrong with the world and reasons to hate the people who ran it, I naturally gravitated to environmentalism because there were certainly plenty of things wrong with the environment. And the more I looked at what was wrong, an exploding world population, exploding levels of resource consumption, rising global temperatures, trashing of the oceans, logging of our last old growth forests, the angrier and more people-hating I became. Finally, around the time my marriage was breaking up, I made a conscious decision to stop worrying about the environment. There was nothing meaningful that I personally could do to save the planet, and I wanted to get on with devoting myself to the things I loved. But then a funny thing happened to me. It's a long story, but basically I fell in love with birds. I did this not without significant resistance, because it's very uncool to be a bird watcher. Because anything that betrays real passion is by definition uncool. But little by little, in spite of myself, I developed this passion, and although one half of a passion is obsession, the other half is love. And so, yes, I kept a meticulous list of the birds I had seen, and yes, I went to inordinate lengths to see new species, but no less important, whenever I looked at a bird, any bird, even a pigeon or a robin, I could feel my heart overflow with love. And love, as I've been trying to say today, is where our troubles begin. Because now, not merely liking nature, but loving a specific and vital part of it, I had no choice but to start worrying about the environment again. Once you're hit with a love like that, however late or early, it changes your relation to the world. In my case, for example, I'd abandoned doing journalism after a few early experiences because the world of facts didn't excite me the way the world of fiction did. But after my avian conversion experience had taught me to run toward my pain and anger and despair rather than away from them, I started taking on a new kind of journalistic assignment. Whatever I most hated at a particular moment became the thing I wanted to write about. I went to Washington in the summer of 2003 when the Republicans were doing things to the country that enraged me. I went to China a few years later because I was being kept awake at night by my anger about the havoc the Chinese are wreaking on the environment. I went to the Mediterranean to interview the hunters and poachers who were slaughtering migratory songbirds. In each case, when meeting the enemy, I found people whom I really liked, in some cases outright loved. Hilarious, generous, brilliant gay Republican staffers. Fearless, miraculous young Chinese nature lovers, a gun-crazy Italian legislator who had very soft eyes. In each case, the blanket hatred that had come so easily to me wasn't so easy anymore. When you stay in your room and rage or sneer or shrug your shoulders, as I did for many years, the world and its problems are impossibly daunting. But when you go out and put yourself in real relation to real people, or even just real animals, there's a very real danger that you might love some of them. And who knows what might happen to you then. Thank you.
Writer Jonathan Franzen speaking to graduates of Kenyon College in Ohio. To hear the full address, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.